Hello, this is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Kyle Kopitke. He is running for president of the United States as an independent. Kyle, it's great having you on.
Thank you so much, Robert. You know, it's really amazing that with all the news coming out of Iowa tonight that you're being kind enough to have an independent candidate on. I really appreciate it.
I guess the first question I will ask you is, what inspired you to run for president?
Well, it's, you know, when I was a little boy, Jesus touched my heart with the love of his gospel and the Constitution. And so I've been active in civic affairs for pretty much all my life. But what made me decide to run for president, and I decided that back in February of last year, was when I was reading about how the government wants to implement NIST, which is the National Adult Immunization Plan, which requires children up to 16 to get, or 6 years of age to get 49 vaccines and about 60 vaccines for adults. And if you've missed any of those, they'll make you get them again. My son is autistic. He came home from the doctor after getting his mumps, measles, rubella shots, put his VHS in the VCR, opened his mouth to sing with the sing-along, and nothing came out. That day, his brains were literally blown away. For the next 10 years, he only said a couple of words. He's high-end autistic. And I'm not going to sit back as a father, as an American man, and let my son be held down and vaccinated against his will or my wife. This is not that's not the America I was raised in. And also that's the main reason. But other reasons are, one out of every five women today, Robert, are coming down with breast cancer. One out of every five. And one out of every five men is now getting prostate cancer or some other form of cancer. It was never like this. Why? We have ingredients in our vaccines, our foods, our plastics, our furniture coverings that are banned in other countries. And why are they allowed here? Because we have the best government money can buy. Our politicians in Washington are addicted to greed, and we need a president in the White House that is not bought off by the 1% and the globalists. So, and I can go on about other reasons, but that's the main. I mean, one out of every 35 kids now, Robert, is getting autism. Back in the 1980s, it was one out of every 10,000. I mean, when I was growing up in the 60s, we had a couple of kids that, you know, had some issues out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, just a couple. And now it's terrible what's going on.
Were you always an independent, or were you involved with either the Democratic or Republican Party at some point?
Well, I started in 1968 in sixth grade going door-to-door for Humphrey, and before the election, I actually started going door-to-door for Nixon. In 72, I lived at George McGovern's headquarters in Naperville, Illinois, and over the years, I've ran as a Democrat and as a Republican. And so, I mean, those parties, you can't get into those parties unless you're a member of the 1%. And they have a pecking order, a hierarchy, and they have to approve you. And I'm not approved because I talk about the issues. Nobody's talking. Who talks about the New World Order? Why am I not on ABC or CBS? Because I talk about the New World Order. And I talk about the leaking a nuclear power plant in Japan at Fukushima that blew up in 2011 that today, right now, is still leaking high levels of radiation into the water, in the air, and pummeling California, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, and Alaska with radiation. And those fish you're eating, I mean, I'm sure you saw in the news about 6 months ago, some kid took his Geiger counter into the seafood store, and it would lighten up. So, I mean, this is, we have to do something. We have to talk about the issues. Nobody's talking. Who's talking about the vaccines? If you say the vaccines aren't safe, ABC, CBS, NBC, and all these political candidates that take mega bucks from the pharmaceutical industry, they laugh at you. And they call you a kook and a crazy, but that's psychological warfare because that's what they do. If you challenge the 1%, you challenge their profits and their perpetual income, what they do is they call you crazy and call you names. But the American people are waking up. They're seeing that they need to question. In fact, I would say that the highest form of patriotism, Robert, is to question the government at every level, at every turn, because they're mere mortals. They're not gods with a small g. They're mere mortals, and they're subject to being bought off. And that's why the Constitution is so brilliant, because when our founding fathers developed it, the Spirit of the Lord rested upon them, and the Spirit inspired them to put in checks and balances so that the White House watches Congress, Congress watches the White House, the court watches them. But now all that's bought off. Our legal system is gone, and so forth. And, I mean, just look what happened up there in Oregon. I mean, I've written two books on military tactics. I would have never developed a stop and interdiction like that. That was totally unprofessional. And to think we had the FBI, probably ATF or whatever it's called these days, and all these different other state police and all these different agencies, and that's what they plan to stop these guys. That's totally totally wrong.
I know you did say you were involved with Jerry Brown's campaign in '92.
Yeah. Jerry Brown was running for president in 1992, and I was fortunate enough to be selected to be his state director in the state of Utah during the Democratic primary. And Jerry was very nice when he would come into town. The two times he did come, one of the times he spent the night at our house, and my wife cooked breakfast for him, and he had his staff sleeping on the floor. And although we were outspent by the Clinton machine, we were blessed to beat them, because I was on the radio and on TV and in the newspapers every couple of days. And so I was able to turn Jerry's issues in a way that people understood them, and also to localize them, as Tip O'Neill, former Speaker of the House, smartly said, was that most of politics really boils down to local issues, and that's very true. And so I talked about Utah issues, and when Jerry would come into town, I would encourage him to talk about the issues that mattered the most to Utah. And so we were outspent 5-20-1, who knows, but we were able to run an insurgent campaign against the Clinton machine and defeat them. And so that's of all the candidates that are running, because it may change tonight, but I'm the only one that's actually managed a successful presidential campaign against the Clinton machine, where another candidate won. And the other thing I would point out, Robert, is that there's about 1,200 people or more that have filed a Form 2, and a Form 2 means you're a official candidate in the eyes of the Federal Election Commission for president. If you stack all those people from top to bottom, with the top being the most amount of lifetime votes received, I'm number 15. I've had over 100,000 votes in my lifetime. And if you take that group of 15, I'm the only one that served in the military and the only one that's been an American diplomat posted overseas when I served in the United States Peace Corps. And I negotiated over 100 agreements on behalf of the government of the United States. And Trump is right when he says we're getting killed at the negotiating table. But when I negotiated, the United States won, and I tried to make it look like the Filipinos, I would give them things too, because a really good negotiator makes both sides walk away like they've won something. Whereas our trade agreements, TPP, TPA, NAFTA, all they do is enrich the 1% and move globalism and the New World Order closer to reality by sending all our manufacturing. And it's really terrible, because in the event of a war, which we pray would never come, what happens is we don't have the manufacturing. It'd be worse than Pearl Harbor all over again.
So you decided to run a completely independent. Did you consider one of the existing third parties like Libertarians, Greens, or Constitution?
Well, the Libertarian Party is more to the left. I'm an environmentalist, and I believe in wiping out student loans, so I'm way on the left on some issues. But the Libertarians, they're already pretty well loaded up with candidates like Gary Johnson, former governor of California, and John McAfee of the Internet antivirus fame. So they have some heavy hitters there. I've had some discussions with the Constitution Party and the Independent American Party and the American Independent Party, but that's still early for them. IAP out of Utah did select a very nice gentleman, but I'm not sure if he's going to remain in the race or not. So I've looked at some of those. In the Green Party, they have Jill Stein already, and she has just a tremendous amount of support within the Green Party. So I'm looking at an independent run, which the path for me to get on the ballot in all 50 states requires 900,000 signatures. That's valid signatures, Robert. So, and I've done signature drives before, and I'm sure you're aware that for every one signature you get, you need to get three signatures to get one valid one. So I need about 2.7 million signatures. But right now what I need first, before I can go out and get one signature, is I need to find a vice presidential running mate. So I would ask your listeners to please pray that I can find an honorable man, somebody that won't drop out, because if they drop out, then all those signatures are invalidated and I'm off the ballot. But that's what I need. And I spend most of my time talking to people, and there's not a lot of people that actually want to run seriously for president. They have good intentions, and they may file, but they don't have generally the experience which it takes to run an effective campaign. And that's where I'm blessed, having been involved in a number of campaigns and also having managed a victorious presidential primary. I have some of those experiences, but there's still a huge learning curve that everyone has to realize, that it takes a lot of people and good emotions to move forward. But it's great. It's great to be in the arena, Robert, to be fighting for the Constitution. This this election, Robert, really, it's a national referendum between whether or not we keep our beloved and inspired Constitution of the United States of America, or if we surrender it to a one-world government of a new world order. And that's what this election boils down to. And it used to be, when I would say that, people would laugh and say, he's a kook. But you know what I do, Robert? I say to them that still laugh, I say, go to Google, type in these four words, quotations, new world order, and then do another search, quotations, one world government. And then go to YouTube, type in the same four words again, and the other four words, and then go through the pages, not just the first one. And then you will see, you'll see all these top Democrats and top Republicans and top one percenters saying, we need to have a one world government, a new world order.
I think with this whole sort of globalism, I think the primary driving force behind it is corporate greed and greed on behalf of banks, but there's also other factions. Like there's sort of leftists who have an idealized version of the world where they think if you abolish nations and redistribute wealth globally, you'll solve problems. But those people, they're a faction, but they're just sort of useful idiots for the main driving force, which is like the multinational corporations.
Yeah, you know, it's, I'd like to run through the field and throw up daisies and petunias and throw pecan nuts to squirrels, but the reality of the world we live in is every generation of history produces its own fair share of madmen. And when you don't have checks and balances and laws and honest people to protect protect society, bad people, evil people will move in and take power. That's throughout history. That's human nature. And so that's why we have to understand these many people who want a one-world government of a new world order. Some of them are very sincere, but they just as you were saying, they just don't understand the human nature of power and how, as Lord Acton said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if we ever get to the stage where we have a new world order, that government will in time will crush anything, and they want to microchip people and just control us and It'd be Soylent Green and everything else.
Just look at what happened to Europe. They gave up sovereignty of their borders under the Schengen zone agreement, and look what's happening to them now.
Well, they're being destroyed, their culture, and this is part of globalism. See, globalism, I was in Germany during the Cold War, and from part of 76, 78. And what I saw there was they were doing away with individual currencies. They were changing and getting rid of national anthems, or changing them so that they would be played less. They were wiping away the individual country's history so people didn't have love of their own country, and trying to merge everybody together. And so the globalists have picked up the pace, just bringing in all these people that you see what they're doing, and so the borders are open, and the globalists are just trying to transform Europe and destroy freedom, and then they can come in with their globalist government and forcefully vaccinate and take out people, declare martial law, and do the other things. These false flags that they're doing are just horrendous.
Were you involved with any of the other third-party candidates? I'll give you some examples, and tell me what you think about them. Ross Perot, Pat Buchanan, and Ralph Nader.
You know, I think I voted for all three of them. Or I meant to. I'm not sure if I actually did, but I was supporting all three of them. I know Ross... I had a sign out in my yard for him when he ran. And Pat, when he ran, I believe I voted for him or I was going to vote, and something happened where I wasn't able to. And then Ralph, I'm pretty sure I voted for Ralph, or maybe I didn't vote for Ralph. I think I voted for somebody else, but he was like, it was him or somebody else. And I may have gone for the Constitution Party or some other person, but I had considered Ralph, and he's done a lot of good. Some of his issues I don't agree with, but you know, we don't agree with everybody on everything. But I applaud that these people are out there and so forth. And Ron Paul, I was under consideration for as being his state director here in Michigan. The first time he ran, but they selected somebody else, which is fine. So I supported Ron Paul. He wanted to audit the Fed. You know, the Fed is just out of control. We need to. I mean, they're the way they gouge people on interest rates. The government can't raise interest rates because the national debt then would just bloom and blow up. And, we'd continue to have foreclosure problems. And that's why I've called for a moratorium, a one-year moratorium on home foreclosures, ranch foreclosures, farm foreclosures, small business foreclosures. You know, we need to take a look at all that, because I live here in Flint, Michigan, and you wouldn't believe all the people that I know that have lost their homes. And it's a shame. There's no need for that. America is not an apartment building. America is homes and farms and ranches.
You pointed out you are the only candidate with military experience. I know the other one is Jim Webb, who dropped out, but he's also talking about running for president.
Yeah, well, until he makes a move, I don't count him. But, you know, he obviously, when he was in there, I did count him. But because he's dropped out, and Lindsey Graham dropped out to Air Force Reserve and so forth. But Jim, if Jim comes in, he will be a formidable candidate. And I'm really hoping Ron Bloomberg comes in, because for me to win, my path to victory is I need the pie divided up a bit more. So if we could have the Democrat and then Bloomberg, who's another Democrat, basically, appeals to the Democrats, and then a Republican, somebody like Bush or Trump or Kasich, or those, I will pull a bunch of Republicans off of that. Now, I know Donald is very popular right now, but you have to imagine over the next number of months before we get into November, if he's the nominee, they're just going to throw hundreds of millions of dollars – at him. And so that's where I have an opportunity where the it's kind of like Iowa all over again, when John Kerry and Dick Gephardt spent millions of dollars attacking each other, and then people just didn't, they just couldn't vote for either of them. So they ended up voting for John Dean. John still lost, but he came very close.
What is ironic, you brought up Michael Bloomberg. The system is so rigged against third parties, but the irony is, if, let's say hypothetically, it's Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are candidates. They may have flaws, but they're also candidates who make, they make the 1% uneasy, and they make them, they challenge them on a lot of issues. So if, let's say hypothetically, it's Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, the establishment could end up by backing Bloomberg as the independent.
Well, I don't think, you know, and that's always a possibility, but again, having been on the inside of the politics, I just don't see where the 1% are going to let Bernie Sanders be the nominee. And I really don't think the 1% Republicans are going to let Donald be the nominee. I think what happens is forces will come in, and who knows what those forces will be. But in time, Bernie and Donald will drop out. Now, I hope they stay long, because the more they rally and educate voters, the more those voters hopefully will come to me. A lot of Bernie Sanders voters aren't going to vote for Donald Trump or John Kasich or Jeb Bush, so hopefully they will take a look at my campaign if I'm on all 50 ballots or almost on all 50 ballots.
And I think both of them are bringing attention to important issues. Bernie Sanders is bringing attention to the 1% issues, and I think Donald Trump is bringing attention to, like, trade, immigration issues as well.
Yes, and those are issues I talk about also. So they agree with me, and I agree with them. And so that's. But these are issues that the American people have wanted addressed for a long time. But the 1% control those. And so they control the major candidates, so the major candidates don't talk about the major issues. And it's just like our military. We have the largest defense budget in the world. And whenever somebody says, let's cut it, many of the established candidates say, no, you can't cut it. Well, there's so much waste in there. We have our F-35 that fails tests, that the F-16 beats it in a dogfight. Our Navy ships, as reported a couple days ago, the new Navy ship that was built in Australia, can you imagine our building our weapon systems in a foreign country? They're not sure if it's going to survive in rough waters. It may sink with the soldiers on it. Our Navy has shrunk so bad that the Marines, it was reported a month ago, are looking at renting space on a ship with a foreign flag. Our cruise missiles, our ship-to-ship missiles, the Chinese cruise missile goes 3 times further than our missile. We couldn't even get close in the event of a ship-to-ship battle with the Chinese, and we pray that never happens. But, you know, this is we're just totally unprepared. And then we had one of our top-secret missiles was shipped over to Cuba by accident. One of our drones has, you know, been captured by the Iranians, and then the Iranians just this past week flew over our aircraft carrier with the drone. And then 2 days ago, the head of Iran, the Ayatollah, presented medals to the Iranian soldiers who captured our ships, those two boats. And so it's we need a commander-in-chief. We cannot afford, Robert, to have another president who has no military experience. And I'm sorry, with all due respect, watching John Wayne movies is not real military experience, nor is sitting behind a desk listening to others who served. That's not military experience. True military experience comes from having worn the uniform of the United States of America. It's the same thing with foreign policy. Just because we like to watch Roman Holiday with Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck doesn't give us classical foreign policy experience. Neither does sitting behind a desk listening to somebody talk about their foreign travels or flying over to London and having lunch for an hour or two, then flying back. Classical foreign policy experience is being posted overseas as a diplomat for the government of the United States, negotiating on behalf of the government of the United States with foreign powers. That's what I've done. And I learned the language, and you negotiate. Classical foreign policy experience is also
what
learning the language.
What countries did you negotiate with?
Just the Philippines. That was it. That's where I served.
As for wars, are you opposed to most of the major wars that we've gone into? Under Bush was Iraq and Afghanistan, and under Obama, he overthrew Gaddafi, which that contributed to a lot of the big mess we're in now. ISIS took over Libya, and you have the whole migrant crisis flooding for Libya. Also, under Obama, there was the arming of the rebels in Syria. Are you opposed to most of the foreign policy of Bush and Obama in regards to the wars that they've started?
Well, let's start with Obama and work backwards, shall we? I'm not privileged to the inside intelligence, okay? Looking at from what we see, we know Gaddafi was talking about creating a gold dinar that would be the currency of Africa. We know that from leaked memos from the Department Defense Intelligence Agency that there were those within our government that wanted to use Libya as a base to supply weapons and funds to the group that became ISIS. Okay. And Gaddafi didn't want to do that, and so he was taken out. That's what's been reported in the foreign press. If that is correct, that was totally crazy, made no military sense. In creating ISIS, if we had a hand in that, which according to various foreign press and former intelligence people, intelligence service officials, officers are claiming that we did, that was a very bad mistake. But again, this is what happens when you have elected presidents and secretary of states that do not have foreign policy experience or served in the military. They don't understand. They're getting all of their advisement from defense contractors who profit off wars, and unfortunately they're blinded by the disease of greed as well. So I think the creation of ISIS by our side, if that's what indeed happened, and I will certainly, as President Kopitki, will have a commission to look into that, and as well as the overthrowing the government of Libya. I mean, we build countries. We don't overthrow them. That's our heritage. Sometimes in history it's been reported that we do, but, generally speaking, we build countries. As far as Syria with Bush and going into Afghanistan after 9/11, there's so much doubt that 9/11 occurred as the commission reported it. Many Americans, millions of Americans, probably 50% of Americans, at least the ones that I've talked to, believe that it may have been a false flag, something that we did to create, to give more profits to the 1% and advance the cause of globalism and New World Order. I hope that's not the case. But I tell you, I've looked at some of these films and some of these questions on these films, and I've read some of these documents and reports, and it doesn't add up. It just does not add up. So what I propose as President Kopitki, what I'll do is I'll have a real 9/11 commission that will tell the American people the truth, no matter how painful it is.
So you're not endorsing any explicit 9/11 theory. You're just saying there needs to be a deeper investigation.
Well, I mean, the theories that are out there, Dr. Wood put forth the theory that it was a space beam that was shot from outer space or a nuclear blast. Dr. Jones from Brigham Young University, Stephen Jones, came out and said there was thermonanite put in the structures on the various floors, and that with cutter charges, and blew it and took it down. And then there's the theory that the airliners brought it down. Well, the airline theory just does not hold up. I mean, you have Architects for Truth, 9/11, and the Airline Pilots for Truth, and all these other organizations, and they just eat these reports alive. And even some of the members of the 9/11 Commission. I mean, you have Bob Carey. There's a YouTube clip of him saying some things that are very disturbing about the lack of credibility of the 9/11 Commission. And so, you know, there's a lot of theories out there. I don't feel we've been told the truth. 50% of Americans don't feel we've been told the truth. And we have to find out what happened, Robert, because if it was not the airplanes, we have to find out who did it, because if we let them get away with that, guess what? They're coming back, and it's going to be much worse.
You support a slavery reparations plan, and there's two sides of this issue. First of all, your plan, actually, it would call for taxing Wall Street to fund for investing in inner-city communities and, like, job training programs. And the plan itself has a lot of good ideas, but I think the other idea, the other side of the coin is, I think, the issue of things like slavery and European imperialism in the past. It is, if you look at history, I mean, it is similar to the 1%, because it was basically about 2% of people in the South owned slaves. But the other side of it is, I think, past wrongs like slavery and imperialism have been exploited by the elites to sort of guilt trip white countries into giving up their sovereignty. I'll give you an example. As I saw this speech where Jesse Jackson went to Sweden, and he was lecturing this young group of Swedes that because their country had a fairly small role in the slave trade, but still a role, that they basically have to give up their sovereignty and allow basically unlimited immigration from Africa and the Middle East. Even though you support reparations, do acknowledge that issue has been exploited by the elites to get countries to basically give up their sovereignty.
You know, Robert, the 1%, they know all the tricks in the book, and then they're always coming up with new ones, and they will exploit whatever they can as far as human weaknesses and guilt. I approach slavery reparations from a number of directions. Number one, you know, I live in a 95% African-American community, and I've lived in such communities before, and they're really hurting. I mean, these kids, most of these kids are dropping out of school. And part of the reason they drop out of school is because they can't learn. They have some organic issues, and also we don't have enough teachers to specialize.
Illinois?
I'm sorry?
Is this in Illinois?
No, this is in Flint, Michigan, where we're having all the lead issues with the water. But this is, you know, when I lived in Illinois, Chicago had the same issues. And, you know, we have a divided country. And, Robert, part of my job is to try and help poor whites, poor blacks, poor Hispanics, poor Americans. And a lot of African Americans just feel so angry and lost. So, you know, I've been married 29 years. I apologize at the drop of a hat if I need to, for peace and to move the marriage forward, okay? And that's what we need to do. We all need to compromise. But you're right. There's guilt that people are trying to put guilt trips to push a New World Order agenda. And that's, well, some of my money will be for the Kopitke Slavery Reparation Plan. Also will go towards teaching the Constitution and things. But let me say this about that slavery reparation plan, Robert. I'm not running for president to show, okay? I'm not running to get a TV show, okay? I'm very analytical and I'm very methodical. And if I'm going to win in 2016, this year in November, I have to get 20% of the African-American vote. And so I have to talk a language they understand. And slavery reparations is a language they understand. For me to talk about the Second Amendment, protecting the Second Amendment, that's a language gun owners and I share. When I talk about closing down nuclear power plants, that's a language environmentalists and I share. When I talk to women about ending breast cancer or giving them better odds than one in five, that's a language I share. And so I have to build a broad coalition, and I have to give things to each group to so they understand that I'm sincere and give them something they want. And again, when I was a negotiator, that's what I did.
And this money for your reparations plan, this wouldn't come from just regular, like, middle-class white people. It would come explicitly from the bankers.
Yeah, what I've proposed is a 10% transaction tax on Wall Street selling of securities, bonds, other Wall Street-type financial instruments. So, no, it's not coming out of – it's not going to hit the guy on the street. It's going to hit the people that don't pay taxes. It's just like Social Security. There's the $118,000 ceiling. So say, for example, John Jones owns Picture Frame Internet Company. He made $1 billion last year. He only pays Social Security taxes on the first $118,000. And that's it. The rest of the, you know, $990 million tax-free. And that's why Social Security recipients are not getting a raise, because the inflation figures are bogus, but the money's not there. And so we have to allow the 1% to pay their share. And also for that billionaire who made $1 billion, he doesn't pay the tax, and his company doesn't pay the tax. So we're losing out on both ends of it. And that's why SSI recipients, that fund is bankrupt, and now Congress is having to fund that from other sources, increasing the deficit. But that's how I would fund the slavery reparation plan.
As far as your taxation plan, what would your overall taxation plan look like, and what would you do to get basically like the 1% to pay more taxes, like to close a lot of those loopholes? And also, how would you deal with tax rates and tax policies towards the middle class?
Well, I haven't come out actually with a paper on that. I've toyed around with some different formulas out there and so forth. I don't know that I'm really happy with anything. But what I would say is that part of getting the 1% to pay their taxes is that they have to pay over and above the $118,000. So we have to remove that cap. That's one way that they would pay into Social Security heavy amounts. The 10% transaction fee is another way of getting them to pay, and that would pay also a lot of that would go towards college tuitions, because as president, I will go ahead and write off all of those college loans, and we will see if the 10% surcharge or transaction fee will go ahead and pay for future college, or if we need to somehow lower the cost of tuition, because that's way out of range. So, you know, I've looked at some different rates, and, you know, I haven't really settled on something except for this general thought that they have to, you know, pay their fair share, because they're not paying their fair share. And I also believe in, you know, taking care of small businesses. The 1% are crushing. This is the first year in our history, 2015 was the first year in recorded history, that we've had more businesses close than open, small businesses. And I mean, I live here in Flint, and I drive around the Detroit area. Store after store is closing. The only things that are opening up are kidney dialysis centers, medical treatment centers, and dollar stores. Everything else is closing down. And again, the dialysis is, you know, I worked for Social Security Administration for a year, and I used to do medical reviews. And all these people that are getting popping those high blood pressure pills and diabetes pills, their kidneys are getting blown out. and so they go on dialysis. We have more dialysis centers, kidney centers here in Flint, Michigan, than we do Kentucky Fried Chickens or Pizza Huts. And that is it's just totally overboard. And the same thing with the SSRI drugs that people are taking for mental health. They're being overprescribed. I want to decriminalize marijuana to a degree that people can smoke it without going to federal prison. And if they're having mental health issues, let's at least try and see if the weed will help them, because so many of these people, like 22 veterans a day, according to one report, are killing themselves, and part of that is a large part because they're on SSRI drugs. And SSRI drugs, what that does is that will go ahead and block your emotions and your ability to reason, and so you're not thinking clearly, and you end up getting depressed and you take your own life. But we should also talk for a minute about the timely topic of the Zika virus that's hitting us now. You know, is that genetically modified, a false flag virus?
Has it reached the United States yet?
Yeah, it's in about 20 states now, 10 to 20 states. I was just looking at a report. And I think it's 20 cases in 10 states. And today, the El Salvadorian government down in El Salvador, they warned women, don't get pregnant for a couple of years. Great Britain earlier this week told British citizens, if you're thinking of getting pregnant, don't go to these countries where the virus is.
The thing is, we have a wide open border, and Central America is a main source of a lot of the recent illegal immigrants.
We need to close that, because this virus, once it comes in, you know, if you go to my website on Facebook, or if you go to my Facebook account, Kyle Kenley Kopitke, or go to Blogger, Kyle Kenley Kopitke, I have articles, and it shows the pictures of these deformed kids, these poor babies with the elongated heads, rounded heads, and it's terrible, and that's going to be coming to us. And now in Brazil, they've just put 200,000 soldiers in an area where the virus is hit hard, and they're going door to door, and it's terrible. It's out of control. And where did this virus come from overnight? Well, a few months ago, this was they introduced genetically modified mosquitoes down there, according to some of the reports. And as President Kopitke, certainly I'll have an investigation on that. But we need to close our borders. We need to blood test everybody coming in from those areas, because once this virus hits, we're talking a massive pandemic plague that we haven't seen since the great flu epidemic of 1918.
And you said that you would support a one-year moratorium on all immigration.
Yes, I would. That's what we need to do, because our immigration policy is totally crazy. They use the terms 11 million illegal immigrants. They've been using that number for decades. It's a lot more than that, I would presume. I mean, we don't know. Can you imagine? We don't know. They have no idea of what a real number is. They keep using that old 11 million number. We just have so many, and we need to secure our borders. And you know, I love the people in Syria, but they need to be relocated back to Syria. These people coming over here, immigrate. My grandfather was an immigrant from Germany, and a lot of my grandparents were, and so forth. So, and my wife's an immigrant from the Philippines. So there's a path, a natural path. But when people come here, they need to learn our language, and they need to learn our national anthem and learn about the Constitution and develop some pride. And a lot of them have, but a lot of them haven't.
There's limits to how many numbers we can take in. I'm sure if we let in anyone who wanted to come here, a billion people would show up, and our economy and our environment can't sustain that many people.
No, and our water aquifers, which are our most important national resource, are being destroyed by fracking and overpopulation. And we need to get our population down in a nice way not increasing it over the top, because once our water aquifers are gone, Robert, or polluted to such a point, you know, you can reclaim the land in most cases, but your water aquifers, that takes centuries and centuries and thousands of years to get that straight. And by injecting all these chemicals in there, and then, of course, in California, they're using fracking water, recycled fracking water, to water our vegetables that we're eating. I mean, it's just total greed. We need a president that will not be bought off by the 1%, and that will appoint people, not industry insiders, that will go ahead and take a serious look at checks and balances. But again, all this is pie in the sky unless I can get a vice presidential running mate and then start to get the signatures I need. And so that's kind of where I'm at. And again, I plead with your listeners, pray I can find an honorable vice presidential running mate.
What is your stance on, like, the tech visas, like the H-1Bs?
Well, you know, I think we've all seen the reports, the videos and interviews out of Disney where American workers trained H-1B visa workers, and then they lost their jobs. They were told, you're going to lose your job, but we want you to train your replacement. And this is the goal of globalism, is to get American workers flipping hamburgers at McDonald's to 90% of our population while bringing in all these other people that take our good-paying jobs. And so we destroy American families because the men lose their jobs, they lose their self-worth, their self-interest, they end up getting divorced, you have broken homes, and so forth. So, you know, Orrin Hatch and these others, globalists that supported this, you know, it's what they've done to America is they're breaking America, and they're getting nice, I'm sure they're getting nice payments. You know, back years ago, I was a museum director. I went to Washington, D.C. We had a bill, an appropriation in Congress, and I tried to get in and see some of these senators and congressmen, and the people that got in to see them were the $1,000 suits. Their shoes looked more expensive than my houses. Any of the houses I've ever owned, but that's because they give millions and millions of dollars, and we have to stop this government corruption, legal government corruption, because it's destroying our country.
And also, the state where you are in, Michigan, especially Flint, has been devastated by manufacturing jobs going overseas.
It has. We're under 100,000 now, and we used to be one of the most populous cities in the nation as far as industry and so forth. And that's my plan, is we're going to, Donald Trump and I agree that we're going to bring back manufacturing here. We have to, just for jobs and also for national security. We have to be able to have that. And, you know, from a national security standpoint, one of our great, you know, we have some major great ills that nobody talks about. One is an EMP. If we get hit with a device that blows up in the atmosphere, that'll knock out all our cell phones, microwaves, electronic cars, all electronics, and it fries the system. So what happens is we're back to the American Revolutionary War, and we don't have horses, we don't have carts and all this stuff, and then you're going to have massive problems. And they want to close down all the coal industry and tear down those factories, but that's going to be the only thing that you can use to heat with, except a fire. And so we're totally unprepared. And the other, one of the other major issues is nuclear power plants. You know, the nuclear power plant in Japan that's leaking, that's just, it's still leaking. People are going to get radiated from all that radiation and die.
Would you shut down all nuclear power plants in the United States?
I would, because, you know, what we have today, we have a technology problem. Hackers, just today was announced, had hacked a drone, a NASA drone. There's even been reports where the space station's been hacked and changed course. And we had a plane, you know, they've already hacked planes and moved them in the air. So it's, you know, we are just waiting for hackers to go into our nuclear power plants and melt them down, and then they're going to explode, and they'll they take out one or two or three, we're going to lose millions of citizens, millions and millions of citizens from the radiation. So part of being president is looking beyond the tip of your nose and looking at the problems we need to address and to address them. And we have, Robert, we have secret energy forms that we can release. They've been held back. We've been running on the same internal combustion engine for over 100 years now, okay? The reason it's the same is because the 1%, they clamp down on innovation and creation. They buy off the patent office, so to speak, by getting them to call new inventions national security so you can't bring it forth. And it's not national security. It is perpetual interest and income for the 1%. And that's why we need a president that will take them on. And certainly ask for the prayers of the American people, for my safety and whoever my vice president running mate is. So,
on the issue of the 1%, one of the big issues with banking is like the massive interest rates and usury. Would you support legislation to put a cap on the massive levels of interest rates?
Yeah, and what I've said is they have 3 years to collect the debt from somebody. I believe, like in my brochure I sent you, I say I believe in endless love, but I don't believe in endless bill collectors. We got people that are being chased for 20 years for bills. And then what happens is the court allows the 1% to raise the interest rate, and so you may have owed $100 20 years ago, but now it's with all the compound interest, it's $1,000 or $2,000. It's crazy. So what I'll do is I'll give the banks and the credit card companies and Congress 90 days or 120 days to make some amends. Otherwise, I bring out the presidential pen, and I'm just going to do some massive amnesty on past debt over 3 years. We have to let Americans, the reason our stores are closing down is people don't have money. They're paying interest rates, school loans, their wages, they got one or two part-time jobs. People aren't working. They don't have money to spend anymore. It's all going back to the 1% or going to these outrageously high car insurance rates are out of, there's no reason for them to be that high. There's no reason for the utility companies to be charging the rates they're charging. Again, who owns the utility companies? It's the 1%.
Crazy. Same with the health insurance.
Well, you know, it's the same thing. Who wrote Obamacare? The insurance companies who are owned by the 1%. I mean, there's a company here, I won't mention their name, they closed down. They said, we can't say this in public, but we can't afford Obamacare, so we got to close down. They closed down. People here are paying, they've got Obamacare, but they can't use it because the deductible is so high. And then the other problem is it doesn't cover everything. It doesn't cover dental. I mean, if you're poor or lower middle class, they pull your teeth. And so I would include dental and eyeglass care. I call it Nixon Obamacare because actually President Nixon, his brother had major health issues, and it basically bankrupted and almost destroyed the family. And so what Nixon tried to do, well, he tried to bring in national health care, but Teddy Kennedy and the Democrats blocked it. And so then Teddy felt bad, and he tried to get with Orrin Hatch and do something. And then, of course, Clinton tried to do something, and then Romney, and then Obamacare. So I call it Nixon Obamacare, and because it started with Nixon.
Obamacare, he's forcing people to buy insurance from existing insurance companies. Ideally, the insurance companies should function like more as a utility, where there you wouldn't see this massive amount. The amount of profits they're making is insane. I think you posted something on Facebook about some of the CEOs are billionaires.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy that we're paying CEOs $40, $50, $60 million a year. I'm sorry, they're not worth it. But again, it's the 1% taking care of the 1%. But it goes back to Congress. You know, as I started to say, I went back to Washington to try and get a little grant. And the head of the committee, one of the committees, his son was a lobbyist, a paid lobbyist for one of these companies that his dad had oversight in Congress for. So, you know, dad, and so, you know, that kid just got that job so that his dad in Congress would take care of it. And it's the same with, from what I understand, the wives and other kids. And so, you know, again, you know, the Constitution's inspired, but I just wish the Founding Fathers would have put some term limitations in there, but for whatever reason they didn't. But I tell you, we pay a terrible price in this aristocracy in Washington because they're addicted. They're drug addicts. That's all they are. They're so blinded by the addiction of greed, they can't see they're breaking American lives, and then they rationalize it.
What are your thoughts on the police state issues, and especially surveillance, like what the NSA is doing?
Well, let me say this, Robert. When I was in the Peace Corps, actual jihadists, tried to blow me up with a hand grenade. They put a hand grenade to the gas tank of the vehicle our training group was using down in Mindanao. Fortunately, when we hit the bump, the hand grenade was not angled correctly, so the pin didn't come out, but the string broke. So praise the Lord, it wasn't my time and my fellow volunteer PC's time to go. A year later, I was still in the Philippines. I was married. My wife was pregnant. Right behind where we lived in our apartment was a ferry terminal. And in the back of the ferry terminal, a bomb went off from jihadists and communists. My wife miscarried, okay? So I personally understand that we live in a big, bad world. The challenge is that we have to protect our civil liberties while protecting America from these bad people, misguided people, whatever you want to call them, that want to blow us up and destroy us. So while, you know, for decades, we've been monitoring all the phone calls and all the emails, okay? We've been doing that. And we've protected people's civil liberties to a large degree. However, it's become so abusive now that we read reports of NSA people, and the majority of them are very good people. You know, they turn on our cell phones and listen to us, or they turn on our cameras on our computers and watch us and things like that. It's, again, because we have no moral leadership in Washington, and we have political hacks, political donors being appointed to our most important critical positions of our government, that are the morale and the professionalism of our agencies has gone down. So, you know, right now tonight, there's somebody trying to blow up one of our nuclear power plants. There's somebody planning tonight to infect our water supply with a killer disease. So we have to live in a world where we balance civil liberties with the realities of the world. So I am a strong proponent, based on my life experiences, of allowing people their privacy. And somehow, what my goal as president is to find a better balance than what we have now. Because, you know, the CIA is kind of torn in two. Three. You know, we have some in all the intelligence agencies, just like America, we have some people on the inside of the intelligence community that support the Constitution. Then we have some that support globalism. Then we have some that it's just kind of a paycheck. They go with the wind. And right now, the globalists in the intelligence community, in many cases, not all, but in some cases, are winning. So we need a president that will make some mid-course corrections to protect our civil liberties and to ensure that we live in a safe world. And that's a difficult question because people, Robert, will say, well, I don't want people looking at my emails and my privacy, but we know we have terrorists.
Especially if you're a political dissident, then you're especially a target for surveillance.
Well, you know, see, and that shouldn't be. I mean, look at all the Ron Paul people. look at all the Ron Paul people that said during the campaign and shortly after that their computers were infected with porn, child porn. And, you know, that the problem is the NSA has created these...
I've heard a case about that during the Clinton era. There was a political enemy of Bill Clinton, and I think they planted child porn on his computers, and he was arrested.
Yeah, well, this is the games the 1% play. They play dirty because their backers are trillionaires and mega billionaires and millionaires, and so what's one person? Okay, so. You know, we have to have a president. My goal as president is to reform the NSA and these other intel communities so they're not spying on the American people. But they do need to have some latitude where they can look for people that are trying to do bad stuff. And so that's a fine balance. But of the candidates that are running, we know what the Republicans and Democrats are going to do. They're going to do what they're continuing to do, and that's to destroy our civil liberties. I'm saying, I will do everything I can to protect civil liberties, but I have to protect the country because, as President of the United States, if you look at the American Eagle on the seal of the President of the United States, in the left claw, which is closest to the eagle's heart, you see arrows, and that represents commander-in-chief. The most important job of a president is commander-in-chief, and I take that seriously. And so I will take protecting national security from the people out there that want to destroy us very seriously, but I also will do everything I can to ensure that people aren't, their emails are not being abused and their TVs aren't being turned on and they're being listened to when they're doing whatever. So that has to stop. But again, that comes from poor leadership and poor managers that are not being trained and not being held accountable.
We are basically out of time. Is there anything else you'd like to add that I didn't get a chance to touch upon? And also give out your information for people who want to get involved to help your campaign.
Sure. You can email me at Kyle Kopitke, KyleKopitke, @gmail.com. And if you go to Blogger or Medium or Tumblr or WordPress, my account is Kyle Kenley, Kenley, Kopitke. It's all basically the same. I'm just reaching a different audience. And the same with Facebook. Please friend me on Facebook if you can help me collect signatures. Again, I need a vice presidential running mate, and then we'll go for like 3 or 4 states, and then once we get those done, Robert, as we're ballot qualified, because I'm used to doing momentum. I've seen and worked with momentum, the psychology of momentum. So right now I'm not on any ballot, so people don't take me seriously to a certain degree. And so what happens is once I start getting on individual ballots, then people go, oh, okay. And then they take it's a whole new ball game. But I do need a vice presidential running mate, and then I will need help in getting signatures. And if anybody wants a brochure, I have a real beautiful brochure. Just email me at kylekopitke@gmail.com, and I'll send that to you.
Well, Kyle Kopitke, thank you for being on.
Thank you, Robert, and. And Robert, you know, you are a social media, news media genius. I hope at some time in the race you'll consider stepping to the side a little bit and helping my campaign.
Thanks. That's all we have for today's show. So take care, and we'll be back with you next time.